a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors,
brought to you by Trax Power Sports Rentals.
2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back to hour number two and the final one for another week of KSL Outdoors Radio. It is always a pleasure to have you listening. And a quick reminder, we're recording this program on Thursday for air here on this Saturday morning. It's nice to have you along. Navinovskis is still with me here. Navi, thanks for hanging out for another week.
No worries. Pleasure to be here.
Coming up in just a minute, we'll check back in with the road trip. And guys, although I think it's just Mark today because Bob Grove is back in the guiding world since the weather has warmed up, spring and summer months, so he's busy doing that with tours from all over the place with people that have come to the U.S. from all over the world. Roger Eggett will also join us from Bear River Lodge and Trax Power Sports, so we'll look forward to that. Our guest to start the hour, though, is Heather Talley, our Upland Game Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Heather, great to have you back again. Thanks.
Great to have you guys. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Are we in the spring turkey season now or fast approaching?
You know we're in it right now. So the limited entry season just ended. Youth hunt just ended. Now we've got the general over-the-counter season, and people can just go ahead and buy a permit whenever they want and hunt till the end of the month.
Boy, how many decades have we waited to be able to say that? I mean, it's been a long time, right? To actually have an open season for people to hunt turkeys. It wasn't that long ago in our history that their existence was even in question.
Right. I mean, you know, when turkeys first were translocated here, there is evidence, first of all, that they were here pre-European settlement. Nothing known that we can find in archaeological evidence during European settlement, but there were, you know, some evidence before then with turkey feather blankets, turkey bones and petroglyphs and things. So they probably coexisted with Native Americans in Utah. But then we did get Merriam successfully translocated to Utah in the 1950s and Rios in the late 1980s. So, and we've had the over-the-counter hunt for quite a while, but it's nice to have that limited entry hunt during the more desirable season for people when they're gobbling a bit more. So that's why that's a draw.
Yeah.
So.
And Navi, we've talked about this in the past, and I don't want to rehash the things that we never get done on our bucket list, but we've had invitations to go out and hunt these turkeys here in the state of Utah before. We just think they're smarter than we are, I think.
Well, I got to do this. You know, I keep saying that, and at some point I got to do it. I know I've got a couple that were in my fly fishing class today that are actually opting to turkey hunt, Cougar Dam being one of them. And so they're out there, you know, gobbling up those permits that they have.
I would think it's extremely satisfying, Heather, to actually harvest your own turkey and then serve it up for a big dinner, whether that's at Thanksgiving or another night.
Right. And that's the kind of the interesting thing, too, if you're bringing up the Thanksgiving, because we recently started fall hunts just in 2014, actually. So there are those fall hunts for that season that just helps us control nuisance and depredation issues. And then we leave that regular, like more traditional turkey hunting for that spring and spring season.
Is it safe to say turkeys are available now statewide or pretty much statewide?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, we've got them pretty much statewide. And if people are wanting to look at just Merriam's turkeys, because we do have Merriam's and Rio's for our subspecies here in Utah. So if that's what you're looking for, you just want to concentrate in the southeast region, LaSalle, Abajo Mountains, They do generally quit gobbling a bit earlier, so it's going to be definitely a harder hunt for an over-the-counter, but they do exist up there. And then you can find Rios pretty much anywhere in the state.
And the difference between the two is just their choice of habitat?
Yeah, you can see they also have some physical characteristics that they're differentiated a little bit, but you can find those Merriams in the higher elevations, more ponderous and pine. And then Rio Grande's just love those cottonwood trees in the lower elevations and those riparian corridors. So you can find them there lower.
What does a hunt look like? I don't know what the harvest rate is these days.
It varies year to year. We did have a little bit of a dip in the over-the-counter success last year. And our guess is that, you know, the last few years have been really hot and dry during the summer. So we're probably getting a slight decline statewide. Although Fox Elder County, we did have an increase in turkeys up north. But the rest of the state, we have seen a slight dip. And that's just, you know, due to those hot, dry conditions in the summer, it's really hard to have a lot of recruitment with our poults if they don't have those mesic areas with a lot of insects to get growing. So,
well, that's one of the things that you just can't manage yourself, right?
We sure try, you know, rain dances. No, yeah, it's hard. It's hard with the weather and climate. So much turkeys and so many other upland game species are tied so much to weather and climate. That makes it difficult.
The other reason we wanted to have you on this week was to talk about some of the recommendations for upland game and for turkey hunting. But for today's purposes, we'll focus on the turkeys. What are the challenges out there right now besides the climate?
For turkeys in general, you know, it's just that's our biggest thing. There's always a, you know, always an issue if we have really deep snow winters, really heavy snowpack winters, and that they can succumb to the elements really easily that way if there's just no way to get to food. And that's why you get a lot of those urban issues is when we've got really heavy winters, they'll come off of public lands and seek refuge down in urban areas in the valleys. So with that, you know, we've always in the past issued 3 either sex permits for turkeys in the fall per person. But we've noticed that really a lot more toms are being taken or the adult males during that season than we'd like. We want to focus on those, decreasing those populations in nuisance and depredation areas. So to do that, we're hoping to have more of a hen harvest. And with that comes our recommendation this year to ask for there to be 2 beardless permits and 1 bearded or either sex permit allowed for per hunter in the fall.
And I guess that would come naturally because the toms put on a much better show probably in the wild. And so those are the ones that catch the attention of the hunter.
Well, and they're not strutting necessarily in the fall. I mean, any time they might strut any time of the year for fun, but they're not putting on those big displays like that in the fall. But people just really want to look for those big beards, and that's kind of the coveted thing, like bigger antler size with, you know, deer and elk. And so they do kind of target those toms a bit more. But and we don't want to eradicate that ability completely, because a lot of damage done to agriculture is because of toms. They do generally more damage than the hens. But
how
yeah,
so?
We do want to help.
What kind of damage?
Oh, just scratching things more and being more aggressive. You know, just all of the just a more aggressive behavior and getting into those, especially with oat hay bales. You know, they love to dig around in those, and then you've got these giant bales of hay that are completely ruined from turkeys.
But, yeah, and. Yeah. I guess it's a good problem to have in one way, but not so if you're the owner of those bales of hay.
Right.
The population, I was just looking at some of the numbers that Faith Jolly passed along, and it's a pretty broad range, but somewhere between 25,000 and 35,000 is probably pretty tough to get an accurate count.
Yeah, so we have a study based off that we kind of base this off of is from I believe it was done by the NWTF, and that was just showing that about 10% of the population is harvested. So we're kind of looking at harvest data to do that. But like you said, with this new upland game management plan that's coming out, along with that, we're also going to open our turkey plan this year, and that will help us to hopefully get some more research projects on the ground so we can get better population data independent of hunter harvest.
I joked that, Navi, that these birds are probably smarter than we are, but that's the one thing that hunters have all told us, is that it can be tricky. If you don't know how to speak the language, not just to a particular species of turkey here, but also times of day, they know in a second that you're trying to fool them into something they don't want to do.
Tim, those turkeys are incredibly intelligent. In fact, that's the lure. And by the way, I've never seen more turkeys than I'm seeing in the last few years. They tend to come down to the rivers where I am in mid altitude, about 1,000 feet more than the valley floor is where I find them all over. I mean, literally everywhere I go in the evenings when it starts to cool off, here they come. And they're amazing. They're an amazing animal. I told you, I've never wanted to hunt anything more because they're just beautiful. The way they come down and they sneak around and they're all over and there's tons.
Yeah.
And they're smart. Yeah.
You guys have a great set of facts for anybody that wants to look them up on the website at wildlife.utah.gov for folks. And you also, throughout the year, if I'm not mistaken, knowing that a lot of people are getting into turkey hunting and maybe giving up one of the other seasons that they enjoy, always are looking for newcomers to learn the skills they need to actually get started.
Definitely. Yeah, like you mentioned, if you go to our website and you can look at the upland hunting page or Google the turkeys in that search bar on our page, and then it'll bring you to some seminars and different things like that so that people can learn how to do it. And yeah, get out there and have a good time. It's definitely a really fun sport. And yeah, and there's a lot of fun tricks that we share.
The youth hunt just ended this week, and the spring general season hunt open now through the end of the month. Thank you, Heather. Always great to catch up with you.
Same to you. Thanks so much.
Heather Talley is our upland game coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources here in Utah. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go road trip and find out where Mark Wade wants to take us this week. That's next on KSL.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio. Navi has snuck away, and Bob Grove, I think, is back in the touring business as a guide as we head into spring and summer months. So it's just Mark Wade and myself this morning, and I'll be darned if I didn't forget to actually do this morning. I think I've done that how many times now? It is time to hit the road again as we go road tripping with Mark Wade.
On the road again.
Sorry about that. We just can't do this without the official theme song, can we?
We can. It's just us.
Yeah, just Mark and I today to do this road tripping segment. I know you wanted to talk about Panguitch, which we will do, but can I just tell you how much I enjoyed and I commented on your social media. You sharing hiking up into Red Canyon. It's something that we have driven right past on our way to Bryce, and it's so mesmerizing because it's your first real look at what Bryce Canyon has waiting for you just a few miles up the road. But it's the first real look after you make that turn and hit up Highway 12.
Well, it's so good that sometimes you got people who'll drive into Red Canyon and say, well, I must have seen Bryce Canyon. They'll turn around and go on to Zion or somewhere else.
Oh, so I hadn't even thought of that.
It's that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get to Red Canyon here in just a minute. And you were sharing with me, you've got some drone footage that you're actually really excited to share. But let's talk Panguitch for a minute. People headed down to Bryce Canyon and Panguitch, really, probably because we're headed south from the Wasatch Front, don't think of the elevation, first of all.
Right. Yeah, Panguitch is at 6,600 feet and, settled way back in 1864. And the word Panguitch is interesting because it actually means big fish or abundant fish in the Paiute language. And you could see that there was Panguitch Creek comes right down through the town, and the Sevier River, both good for fishing, come right on the east side of Panguitch. So big fish, abundant fish, it must have been.
Yeah. They have such traditions down there, too, which I know is something you wanted to talk about today. But if you get the chance to be down there and you just happen to luck out and be there when some of their town celebrations are going on, it really is a walk back in time.
It is. They do a big balloon festival down there. But one of the fun things is they have what they call the Panguitch Quilt Walk Festival. It's coming up June 8th through 11th in Panguitch. What it is, it's just a celebration of in 1865 or 64, the winter, they had tried to grow some wheat. The wheat did not mature, and the town was going to starve. And so they sent some men over the mountain towards Parowan to get food, but to get some flour, actually. And as they went over the mountain, they were waist deep in snow, they couldn't even walk in the snow, and the wagons, of course, couldn't make it. And so they actually laid down a quilt on the snow, said a prayer, and said, "Hey, we need some help here." And as they were kneeling on the quilt, they realized they weren't sinking into the snow. So they used quilts, laid them one by one to get across the mountain.
Oh, wow.
Go over to Parowan. Yeah, they go over to Parowan. They get this flour, big 70-pound sacks of flour, and then they have to come back over the mountain with these things on their shoulders, using the quilts to walk across the snow.
Now, they don't still do this.
No, they don't reenact that. But,
okay.
But 10 years ago, I got the opportunity to help them recreate that actual event in video form, and we did a documentary on that. You can see it on our website. We'll talk about that at the end. But the quilt walk, and it saved the lives of the people.
I have never heard that story. Now, I didn't grow up as a kid, learning Utah history. I grew up in California and Idaho, but that is a fantastic story and would be fun to go down there to see them, celebrate all of that and learn a little bit more about the history. All right, Red Canyon, if you're headed down to Bryce, you have to go right past it. But my suggestion is do something I haven't done in the past, and that is turn into that parking lot.
Stop in that parking lot. And since we're talking about Panguitch, you're only 9 miles away from Red Canyon in Panguitch. So you can base there, drive 9 minutes away, and you're into Red Canyon, pull into the parking lot. There are trails that spiderweb through Bryce Canyon-like formations in all directions. And you and I were talking just a minute ago. There's a great mountain biking trail there, the Thunder Mountain Trail. Fantastic. And you're riding, again, through Bryce Canyon-like formations. But there's so much beauty there. You got the big ponderosa pines and all this Bryce Canyon-like formations, hoodoo, sticking up all through the forest there.
Yeah, we always stay with Lance down there at Ruby's Inn when we go to Bryce, and he's always running videos of that mountain bike ride, and my wife and I love to mountain bike, as you know, and it looks like a nice, smooth ride just because of the way that rock has broken down through the years. It looks like it would be even a smoother ride than we've gone in the mountains here along the Wasatch Front if you're on a mountain bike.
Well, you can actually start at the bottom of the canyon, or Red Canyon, and ride up and then back down, but there's a for those of us who don't want to climb all that elevation, you can start at the top. There's a parking area at the top. And maybe you leave a vehicle at the bottom and then ride just the zoom all the way down through Thunder Mountain Trail.
Wow, that sounds like fun. But there's so many other things down there which we don't have time to do all of. Panguitch Lake, Cedar Breaks, Bryce is a natural, of course, just a few more miles up the road. Navajo Lake, Cascade Falls. What a great idea to go to Panguitch and kind of use it as we talk about often with you and Bob, use it as kind of a ground zero, a camp spot to go out and explore some of these things.
It's a great base to make a base camp, and of course the weather's just getting to be very good, and the elevation of 6,600 feet in Panguitch will make things just a little cooler at the night, and you'll enjoy, I think, staying there and seeing all those things.
Mark Wade, thank you. The blog site is roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com. Thanks for sharing, buddy. Have a great week.
Thank you.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.